Ich kann mich so gut erinnern, wie oft ich als Kind vom Balkon aus Vögel beobachtet und auch gefüttert habe. Heute begegnen sie mir irgendwie viel, viel seltener und ich höre sie auch kaum mehr. Vielleicht geht es euch ja ganz ähnlich. Ich jedenfalls habe mich schon oft gefragt, ob es tatsächlich früher viel mehr Vögel und damit auch mehr Vogelgezwitscher gab. Zu genau diesem Thema ist vor wenigen Wochen eine Studie rausgekommen. Genauer gesagt ging es darin um die Entwicklung der Vogelbestände in der Europäischen Union. Die WissenschaftlerInnen sind zu dem Ergebnis gekommen, dass die meisten Arten in den letzten Jahrzehnten einen massiven Rückgang verzeichnen. Das Gesamtbild ist aber natürlich deutlich komplexer und auch die Ursachen für diese Entwicklung sind nicht immer eindeutig. Zu diesem Thema habe ich mit der Erstautorin der Studie, Dr. Fiona Burns, gesprochen. Ich bin Daniel Wagner und ihr hört Neutron, den Wissenspodcast von M94.5.
Seit der Veröffentlichung einer Studie
Digitales Modell der Lunge.
Dadurch kann der Auskühlungsprozess der Leiche
Milliliter pro Kilogramm idealisiertes Körpergewicht.
Ach, Fantastika.
Ziel der Wissenschaftlerinnen und Wissenschaftler ist es
Neutron. Neues aus der Forschung.
Today I'm joined here with Dr. Fiona Burns. She is a conservation scientist at the RSPB Center for Conservation Science in Cambridge. First of all, I'd like to ask you, what does a conservationist or conservation scientist like you do all day? What is your main mission?
The main mission? Well, I guess, so in the RSPB, there's about 50 conservation scientists. And so our role is really to support all our colleagues, our policy colleagues, our communications colleagues, to provide them with the evidence to sort of enact conservation change. That could be identifying issues, whether that's species in trouble or whether that's, you know, environmental drivers of change. Or it could be sort of testing conservation solutions so that, for example, say like an agri-environment scheme, and then so that that could be advocated for and ultimately sort of rolled out to the wider countryside.
Interesting. Yeah, I see. So the main reason we have you here today, or I'm very happy to have you here, especially because you're the leading author of a very recently published study about biodiversity loss in the native avifauna of the European Union. So if I remember correctly, we together as the member states of the European Union have lost approximately 600 million individual birds since 1980. But the numbers differ extremely between the respective species. So how does that come? Maybe you can explain it a little bit.
Yeah, so our studies, so quite a lot of studies previously have looked at, you know, for each species, what is the sort of rate of change, whether they have, I don't know, doubled in the last 40 years or declined by 20%, whatever. But this study looked at actually totting up the total number of individuals that were lost. So obviously the species that are more common and widespread would make up quite a large proportion of those overall increases or decreases. So some of the biggest declines that we've seen have been in species that were previously very very ubiquitous and widespread, like the house sparrow or the starling, where we've lost sort of, you know, tens or even hundreds of millions of individuals. So it's just it's another way of looking at the sort of biodiversity change across the sort of continent.
Okay. Yeah, you already talked about some different species. For example, you named the house sparrow, which is called Spatz in Germany, at least the informal term. I think the more formal term is Haussperling. Why is the decrease of this species so extreme compared to other ones? You said there are others that have similar decrease rates, but this is, I think, the top species, if you will. So how does that come? Why is the decrease so extreme in comparison to others?
The house sparrow is a very, very common species. So that's partly why, you know, when we look at the decrease, the numbers are very, very big. but it also has declined. So in terms of proportion, it's sort of the population's about halved in that over that time period. So it is a large kind of proportional decline as well. And it seems that there's different things going on. So this species is, you know, very common in sort of rural farmland areas, but also in urban centres. And it seems there's different issues. And so in common with quite a lot of birds of farmland, the house sparrow, it's thought it's declined, you know, due to a lot of changes that have happened in the way that we farm to, you know, to produce food. And so things like, you know, changing the way that the time that we grow crops. So over the winter, we used to have a lot of fields left bare with lots of seed and stubble. And that was really important for sparrows and a lot of other farmland birds. But that's changed in the last few decades. But also more recently, there's been a big decline in towns and cities, and it's much less clear why that is. There's been lots of suggestions, whether that's, you know, the way that we sort of manage our gardens to be more, you know, paving over the garden for your car, or whether you have much tidier gardens, or whether it's to do with, you know, increasing numbers of sparrowhawks or other predatory birds. But it's not conclusive. And there's, in terms of the raptor species, there's not really any strong evidence that the increase in those species is in any way sort of linked to the decrease in sparrow numbers. So sadly, we don't really know the full story.
Okay. Still some research to do in this respect. I started with asking you about this time frame, 1980 it started, and your study had a look at the time frame 1980 to 2017. So why did you choose this time frame? Was this for practical reasons? Was this because of the data that were best for this time frame? Maybe you could clarify this a little bit.
Yeah, that it's just really dictated by what information is available. It would be wonderful to be able to go back further, because quite a lot of the changes, say, in the way that we farm our land happened. Well, in some countries, for example, in the UK, a lot of those changes happened before 1980. So we may well have seen, you know, bigger changes if we looked back further. But the a lot of the sort of really best information that we used comes from something called the Pan-European Common Bird Monitoring Scheme, which brings to each, a lot of countries in Europe have national bird monitoring schemes. And that's where, you know, thousands of really, really dedicated bird watchers collect information about sort of really kind of consistent information about bird species. And they're pulled together at a sort of a European level to produce the kind of trends for each species in Europe. And those go back to 1980 at the earliest. So that was really dictated how far we could go back.
Yeah. The other maybe broader question I've got about your study is, so far we talked about different species, about increase and decrease in the respective species. But what I would like to know, there is this thing, the last 20 years, the decrease altogether was definitely there, but not the same amount of decreasing species as in the 1990s. So if you compare 1990s with the last 20 years, there is, I would say, improvement a little bit at least. So would you say this is due to better conservation programs, or is it just a little difference that is not really significant? What would you say about this difference?
Yeah, so I mean, it does seem, I mean, the rate does seem to be quite substantially different. And our study didn't directly try to test and say, well, is that due to, you know, any different particular thing? So we can only sort of, yes, I guess, suggest what we think might be playing a part, but we can't really be definitive. So, I mean, it seems, as I mentioned before, that we can see the impact of conservation. So some of those, some of the decline in the, you know, the rate of change could be due to things like the species-specific conservation programs or the, you know, the nature directives that I mentioned. But the other thing also is some of the changes could be due to things like climate change, which was obviously something we didn't, it was outside of the scope of the survey, but some of the species that have shown quite large increases, say like wren or even things like blackcap, have it is likely that climate change has played a role in those changes.
I see, yeah. So you say the main motivation was to collect data and to describe the developments, but the main aim was not to define the causes for this.
That's correct, yeah.
You would say climate change played a role, definitely, among other causes. But as far as I know, also the decline of insect population might be a huge reason for the biodiversity loss in avifauna, right?
I guess there's lots of different research results about you know, the scale and the sort of ubiquity of insect declines, but it does seem that, you know, a wide variety of taxonomic groups are at risk. So yeah, that could be something, certainly, you know, in some of our, again, farmland species, declines in sort of insect food have been implicated in the loss of some things like, say, starlings and things like that.
Yeah. So if you have all these very interesting findings in your study, and you look at conferences, for example, a very important one, UN Biodiversity Conference that took place, or the first part of it took place in October, and the second part will take place at the beginning of next year. So what do you expect from these, let's call it, summits for your field? What is, in the view of a conservationist, important now, and what are your wishes for, especially for the second one? Because the first one we cannot have wishes anymore because it has taken place already. But the second part of this very important conference is the Conference of the Parties to the Convention on Biological Diversity, CBD. What would you say is realistic but also ambitious for you as a conservation scientist?
Yeah, it was, you know, a lot in there. I mean, I guess as a scientist, one of the things we've seen is that a lot of the previous set of targets, so the Aichi targets, it was really hard to know if people had met them. They were not written in a way that, like, it was easy to measure progress or success. So I think that's a really important thing for the next set of targets. We need to sort of make them really measurable and really well defined. But I think this study in particular highlights that we need to be thinking about recovering depleted populations, so keeping the common species common, as well as obviously always a big focus on preventing extinctions. And that's really, really critical as well. But we need to also, if we want to sort of have the same functioning ecosystems and, you know, retain the same benefits from nature, and as well as, you know, sort of, you know, the fundamental point that about conservation, conserving nature, then we need to be looking at both restoring these kind of depleted populations or restoring species abundance, as well as preventing the rarest species from going extinct.
Yeah, these aims sound like ambitious, but also absolutely necessary for the near future. This was Fiona Burns, a conservation scientist at the RSPB Centre for Conservation Science in Cambridge, UK. Thank you very much, Dr. Burns, for your time.
Neutron. Neues aus der Forschung.
Neutron ist eine M94.5-Produktion. Ein Angebot der Media School Bayern.